Hello, and welcome to the very first episode of the Hold Steady is for Women podcast. We're really glad that you're here. In our inaugural episode, we introduce ourselves, talk about our first Hold Steady shows, our favorite Hold Steady shows, and what it's like to be women who really love the Hold Steady. We're kind of experts in that field. Hope you enjoy.
You want to do name and then like origin story, like how you got into them, and then favorite show?
Yeah, let's do that.
Okay. I need to think because I don't know what my favorite show is, but I will look.
I don't know if I have a favorite show yet either.
I have a recent favorite show, The Empty Bottle.
Oh God, that was so good.
And because my best friend who originally got on board with them, with me, was there. Like, she's a mom and she was like out for the night. She came to one of the Talia Hall shows too.
Yeah, I remember.
It's so hard to think of a favorite show. Why did I put myself in that position? So, my name is Kaylee, aka Goth Steady, aka Wine in the Pit. I didn't get to see the Hold Steady until like 4 years into my fandom. So it was 2009, early summer. And I saw them at a now closed, really small bar slash venue in Ithaca, New York called Castaways. And I got there really, really early because I wanted to see the Hold Steady for so long. And when I was lining up by the front, I started meeting these people who were like, oh, I'm from Vancouver. Oh, I'm from Toronto. Oh, I'm from Minneapolis and I'm from California. And I was like, why the hell are all of you people in Ithaca? Like, the only thing people know Ithaca for is Gorgeous and Cornell. So I really had no idea what I was getting myself into. But to make a long story short, the show was transformative and there was confetti and, you know, sweating and screaming and joy. And from that moment on, I was done for. I joined the boards and started... and started planning my next Hold Steady show, which is a trend that would repeat and still does repeat now. You know, you get chasing that high.
Lo, these many years later.
So now a decade later, well, over a decade actually. When I think of my favorite Hold Steady shows, there's so many different ones, but having Lifter Puller open for the Hold Steady is like an all-time high and moment. Just never thought that I would be able to experience Lifter Puller live, and then being able to see my favorite band after that was, I don't know that I'll ever achieve that feeling again. Maybe if I have a child, but I'm not sure that it can ever be topped.
I don't think it could be topped.
My name's Heidi, and I'm a publicist and a cat mom, and I'm also in a band called Early Riser that got to open for the Hold Steady once. That's not my story, though. I was a college radio DJ in, like, 2005 and 2006, and it was not a very big college radio station. Not a lot of people listened to it. It was in New Paltz, New York, but this dude started calling my radio show a lot. I guess he had a job where he was driving, so he was listening to the radio a lot, and he would just call me during my show and request the Hold Steady. And I remember just being like, I don't know who that is. I don't know. Like, what? Okay. Boys and Girls in America hadn't come out yet, so it wasn't like in our new rotation or whatever. So I just had no idea who they were. And now thinking about it, I'm like, how did I play them? Like, did I go on Napster? Like, I don't know. I don't think I like ever owned Separation Sunday or Almost Killed Me on CD. So I'm not really sure how I did that. But at some point, I remember playing Stevie Nicks on the show and being like, oh, this is great, actually. But I mean, I'll be the first to say that, like, I definitely was into this dude and wanted to be into this thing that he was into. As it happens, that dude and I would have this fraught thing that would go on for years. And, you know, eventually we broke up and I still love them. Like, it started out as that. But then, like, I got my roommate into it. I was like a fan club for them, but just me. By myself in college, and I interviewed Craig and Tad for a site I wrote for at the time, Tiny Mixtapes, because I thought I was going to be a music journalist, which is like, I made friends.
Didn't we all
interviewed?
Everyone in the Zoom did.
Yeah, wow, guys. It was funny because they called me the enemy when we talked on the phone. I don't remember who called. It was either Craig or Tad to call me enemy. I don't remember.
Probably Tad.
But yeah.
He'd probably just seen Almost Famous.
At one point in the interview, he did go, rock and roll can save the world. The chicks are great. I sound like a dick. I have tapes of those interviews somewhere. Anyway, the first show I saw of theirs was Irving Plaza 2006. And I went to that show with a girl that I was dating. And that dude who I liked was also there for some reason. Because he liked them. And I remember they started playing, I think they played First Night. And it was in the encore. And he came up to me, kissed me, and left. And that really is just like the perfect, that's exact, it sums it up, right? Like, just kissed me and left. And we were all drunk. And the girl who came with me was like, who is that? And I was, it was a lot. Anyway, I relate, you know, planning travel. Like, every time they would release new tour dates, I'd be like, okay, I'm going to this one. And it's a whole thing, you know? The hotel, can I drive there?
Who can you fly with?
Exactly. I would say my most recent favorite standout was in Chicago in 2019. They played two shows at Talia Hall and then The Empty Bottle. And my best friend, Emily, who was so supportive of me in college when I liked this band, it was really cute. She would always get the lyrics slightly wrong. So she'd be like, I was a Twin Cities garbage can. And I'd be like, close.
Kind of.
Adorable. I love her so much. By 2019, she was fully a mom. And she was like, I'm going to these shows with Heidi. And her husband was like, cool. And we got to be 21 again, but it was more fun. It was more fun somehow. And we just hadn't sang those songs together in so long. Just yelling Chips Ahoy at each other was so silly. Because when the music video came out, do you guys remember the music video?
Oh, yeah. The music video. Every time I have like one glass of wine, I fire up YouTube on the Apple TV and I'm like, babe, do you want to watch Hold Steady music videos?
Why is Bobby a pool boy? Oh no, it's Galen. No, Galen's the
pool boy. Yeah. Please, come on.
I'm sorry. And Franz is like in a cape. Anyway, that was a wonderful, amazing show. And it just felt like everything came full circle. And then right after that, pretty much, we never went to shows again. Because we had the summer and then we had the fall for Boston and then that was it. I've been somewhat planning my life around this band since I was 21 or 22. It's been fun.
I think that there's a lot to be said about how much you end up growing with anything, like any hobby that you stick with, but it's interesting when that hobby is a group of like living, breathing people with their own lives. And so you all kind of grow and change together. And think about the bands that we saw in the mid-2000s, or the Hold Steadies that we saw in the mid-2000s, and the Hold Steady that we see now, and that progression is really interesting.
It's like we all grew.
We did.
Yeah. And the characters in the songs also grew up, but that's for another episode. But my name is Desi, and I first got into the Hold Steady. I saw them on, was it Craig Ferguson? I think, like some late night show, like long, long ago. And they played Stay Positive, and I hated it. I was like, oh, this is not for me. And then because I was, quote unquote, going through some things at the time, I saw the same performance in a rerun many months later. And I was like, who is this band? I will lay down my life for you. Yes, sign me up. So it's just funny now thinking about how my initial reaction was just like, ugh, not for me. And now here I am with two of my best friends that I wouldn't have met without the band. I'm married to somebody that I wouldn't have met if I didn't like this band. Like, it's just wild.
Yeah.
My favorite show, not counting the Lifter Puller Brooklyn Bowl show, not counting Empty Bottle, where we had the stage invasion, would be the second time I saw them. It was at a tiny, tiny bar in Kalamazoo. I don't remember the name of it. And I didn't even know at the time that they were like big. Like, I didn't know they were a thing. So like I bought my ticket and one of my friends was going to come with me, but by the time she got around to it, she was like, it's sold out. And I was like, that's so weird. And then between buying the ticket and the day of the show, I was a music entertainment major in college and we were producing a show. And as soon as setup started for that show, I broke my ankle dancing to Wake Me Up Before You Go-Go by Wham. And that was like a week before the show in Kalamazoo. So I was like still very much on crutches. And I was like, this is not stopping me. Like, I'm still going to be in the pit. Like, I'm still going to be as close as I can be. And that was kind of my first experience, like seeing how like friendly and nice the fan base is, because there were so many people who were like, do you need water? Are you okay? Do you want to sit down? Can we bring you a beer? And I was just like, people aren't like this. This is not real life. So anyway, that was a very fun night. And that was probably my favorite Hold Steady show.
Such a nice memory.
Yeah.
Ever runner up. There was a party at the Hard Rock Cafe in Manhattan. And it was supposed to be some like sort of mucky muck mixer, like for industry or whatever. And the code got out, or whatever the RSVP link was, got out. And it like went on the boards. It was like sponsored by Captain Morgan. So it was just like,
oh no,
Captain Morgan plus. And then there were all these people there that like, obviously thought that they were at like, some fancy music industry mixer. And then about 200 insane Hold Steady fans who were just like, it turned into just like a total bloodbath because there was this chaos element that they were not expecting. It was really fun.
That's so funny.
I think all of the Brooklyn shows kind of blend into each other. It's hard for me to differentiate my favorite shows among them, except for Lifter Puller. As I mentioned earlier, during spring of 2014 in the Teeth Dreams tour, it was a very tough time for me personally. And I saw them in Pawtucket at the small venue. And it was coming off a rough stretch. I went with Matt and his wife, and their friend, who I sort of had a weird thing with, was also supposed to come. But then we had a big fight. And so he didn't come. And I was feeling pretty sore about that because it like put a weird layer over the whole thing. But then in the show, I was obviously front and center, and Craig, they were doing Spinners, and which Spinners, and Craig did the whole like, and she's got him if she wants him, and she's not really sure, and I was like, probably, and he just started laughing while they were playing, and it was such a like a nice moment coming off of some of the worst moments of my recent life. And I think we all have stories like that where we've been able to throw on a record or go, you know, lucky enough to see them at a show, and it's been like a salvation.
That is something that I think a lot of people who like the Hold Steady were drawn to them, maybe because we relate to them, but also like to maybe get through specific hard times in our lives. I remember another Craig interview one time where he was talking about seeing all the same faces in the front row, like night after night, city after city. And then eventually like the faces start to change and people move on. Clearly we haven't, because here we are. But yeah, I think that's something that a lot of people can relate to. Just like in the midst of so much shit, there's at least one moment of levity.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, there's, when they were on their hiatus, that was like rough. Like
yeah.
Last show, what ended up being that last show in Bowery was so weird. There was like an NBA All-Star Game after party. Win Butler DJ'd. It was
the pizza night?
The pizza night. Handed me a pizza. And the vibe, they all hated each other by that point. And then it was just like, this has been a constant during like college, undergrad, through my entire first marriage, just casually, having, I don't know what I would do if they, and I know, obviously I know one day they'll stop making music, but like, it's hard to imagine a life without a Hold Steady show on the horizon.
Mm-hmm. Even though it's virtual, I know it's not just me that's having this problem, obviously lots of people are having this problem, but they're about to play two shows like a mile from my house that I can't go to. and it just feels incorrect. But like, nobody can go. It's strange. Like, they're going to be here, but they're not really going to be here.
Yeah. I like the virtual shows. I'm glad they can make some money off of it and that they can get some exposure. And I think that they've been able to carve a nice niche for themselves as a band who's doing legitimate streaming shows during this. And I really enjoyed them. And that being said, definitely had a lot of like post-streaming show depression.
Mm-hmm. Like unexpectedly so. Because I didn't, going into them, I just thought like, oh, this is going to be really weird. But it really was not.
No, it was really nice. And I just want to hear the album live. I just want to hear Craig say, I'm really glad that you're here.
I want to hear him say that the toast is gross. You know, the streaming shows that they did in November. Wait. Oh my God. I don't remember when anything happened, but I was.
Well, you were in Texas.
Yeah, I was literally stuck in Texas. Yeah. And it helped a lot. And Craig like shouted out that I was sequestered in Texas, which was hilarious to me. But it was really weird. It helped me feel a little bit better, even though I was in like a really bad situation. For those who don't know, my gallbladder failed.
Well, you were driving across the country, basically.
Yeah, I got stuck in oil field Texas. Do not recommend.
A lovely spa vacation. I think the first time that I started really thinking about how many women were at a Hold Steady show was probably on the Teeth Dreams publicity tour, because Craig was in an interview and talked about the percent, and he said that thing about a percent of women in an article. Do you guys remember this?
No.
The things that stay in my mind. So it's from a Spin interview in 2014. And oh my God, he talks about going to South by Southwest. What a different time.
God.
He says, I'm really sensitive about writing women because, look, have you been to a Hold Steady show? How many women do you see in the audience? A small percentage, maybe 18%. Yeah, so there's a lot that ends up scratched out. I'll put it that way. I'm very self-aware that things could go wrong. The way I write about women has to be right. So I want to create a sensitive character that has ups and downs, but ultimately it's a human, right? It's something I pay attention to, but a lot of the way I use characters in general, men or women, is out of a desire to listening to rock music with characters, blah, 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 Bruce Springsteen, something about Lacan. Unfortunately, in 2014, that really resonated with me because I was also insufferable at the time. But well,
it was long ago.
Yeah, I'm not insufferable anymore. I think that was the first time that it was also because it coincided with that I was in a grad program that didn't have a lot of women in it and was writing a lot about feminism and just thinking a lot about those spaces. And so that was really the first time that I looked around at the Hold Steady shows that I'd been going to for the last 5 years and been like, oh, well, fuck.
I think that also kind of like connects the idea that if we're at a show, we're 400% more likely to get asked at a Hold Steady show if our boyfriend brought us than at, like, I don't know, like Amos Lee, you know?
Yeah, we're all part of the insane front row, or we're once part of the insane front row, and now we've retired ourselves to side stage. And like, I've lost count of how many times I've been waiting for the Hold Steady to come on and I have some bro next to me like asking me about other times I've seen them, or like asking if I've heard this B-side, or like asking what,
like quizzing you.
Yeah, like deciding if I am worthy enough to be in this spot that he wants to Instagram from.
Yeah. It's funny too, because I don't think that I really noticed the absence of women until I met you guys at like the first Brooklyn Bowl, because I had only seen them, I don't know, maybe 5 times before the hiatus. And then 2 of those were at Riot Fest, but I just never thought much of it because I didn't have any friends that liked them. I fully got into them on my own. So I just wasn't like looking for it. I wasn't aware of it. And then as soon as I was, it was like, oh, we kind of really are the only women here. And that is kind of weird. I don't know.
I grew up in the emo and hardcore scene. And, you know, in the early 2000s and the mid 2000s, and have so much internalized like misogyny shit over those shows and those lyrics. And so for a long time, I had been used to defending my place and my space and like my existence in as not someone's date, or if, you know, a lot of that was also seeing guys not thinking that I was hot enough to be at shows, but that's a different aside. But I think because of that, the Hold Steady shows were always such a welcoming place for me from the start. It was like how I imagine religious people feel at church.
Yeah, it was always very joyful for me too. Right. Like, and I think that's also part of why I never noticed or never felt as like, I don't know, other as it seems like it is, you know.
When I get to bring somebody with me for the first time, do you guys remember when Patterson Hood opened and then those two women sang with him? Mm-hmm. So like I knew them. They were a band called the Reformed Whores. They're like a comedy band. They're really funny and great. And they had never seen them before. And so they stood, you know, side stage with me and we watched, and it was like watching somebody just have like a religious experience for the first time. At the end of the show, like they were just beaming. And I was like, I know, right? Right? It was the best.
Yeah.
So I guess I zero in on the people that I'm with the most. So I just don't notice like the sea of flannel.
Yeah. Yeah. And something that I don't think a lot about, but the first time that I saw them was at Calvin College, which is a Christian college in Grand Rapids, Michigan. So dry campus, which was wild after everything I had heard about, you know, seeing them. I was like, they're going to be sober and we're all going to be sober. Like, all right, weird flex, but okay. But at that show, and I'm especially kind of like before I met all you guys, I was very like not introverted, but just like self-sufficient. And like, I don't need to talk to anybody. I don't need friends. I don't want to talk to people. But at that show, I was next to two other girls, which looking back, like we were probably the only women there, but that was also kind of the first time that I like opened myself to like talking to new people or like even talking to somebody that was also there. So I think that that's another reason that it took so long to like really kind of click, that it's so ratioed.
So I think the Brooklyn Bowl shows have intensified it a lot for me because it is now it's such like a destination experience for so many people. And because the band's not touring like they used to, it's a friend and family reunion on top of being a show. So we have a mixture of like all these people that I'm really excited to see, but then a lot of people who are like, we're gonna go to Brooklyn for the night. And like, after I get off of work in the finance district, and we're gonna fucking rage. And I hope they play Stay Positive. And so you get all the, usually Friday night, which is the violent night. Mm-hmm. As we've all experienced. And so I think that those shows, as I love them, but they've intensified that ratio. And you do see a lot more of the girls there on a date. That being said, over the last few years, we've met some incredible women who obviously love the band and they're so excited to be in the front row with other women.
And have people look out for them.
Exactly. And not being asked to like prove their worth and their place.
Yeah. And just feel welcome and feel like you belong and that you're not taking up somebody else's space.
Yeah.
Yeah. The violent Friday night really bugs me. I remember every year I'm always like, oh, Thursday's so great because it's kind of a little more chill. And like, I remember like feeling on Fridays and just like, I just hope. And I think Friday was the one year when like Craig had to be like, stop it. Mm-hmm. Like,
That guy pushed me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. I think that was a Friday. That guy had been shoving me all show. He was really drunk and mm-hmm. I shoved him back and he freaked out and mm-hmm. Craig had to stop the show. I left the front row for like the first time ever after that.
Yeah, that was the first year of Brooklyn.
I think one of the things I've appreciated having you know, Craig always said he wanted the Brooklyn shows to be like a last waltz with like guests coming on stage. And I think that one of the things I've appreciated over the last, I would say 2 years especially, is that there's been a dedicated effort to have women and people of color be featured as the opening acts, which is, you know, a really big departure for this usual white man scene of indie rock, and especially of this indie rock.
What's
a thing that I noticed that's really cool about it is that, like, the crowd is, even if it's mostly dudes, like, they trust whoever the Hold Steady picks. Like, they are totally on board to try it out. And so, like, when Sheena, Anika, and Augusta opened for them in Boston, which was the most beautiful, haunting, not bar band drinking thing ever, everyone shut the fuck up and listened.
But this is also, I don't think that the, and I'm just going to get on my Teeth Dreams pedestal. I don't think the Hold Steady's been a bar band in a really long time. Like, I think that they stopped being a bar band after, I mean, after Almost Killed Me technically, but I think that their sound stopped being a bar band after Stay Positive. I think that from that moment on, they've been on the other side of what happens.
The other side of 40, basically.
Right. And what happens when you leave the bar?
When you leave the bar, yeah.
Yeah. So the narrative that they often get in publicity and in articles is like, oh, the raucous choruses of the bar band. And I'm like, name a Hold Steady song that has come out in the last decade that has had a raucous sing-along chorus. Like, I'll wait.
I mean, Hurricane J.
Yeah, which is now more than a decade old.
2008.
Is it really?
2010, yeah.
Yeah, wow.
Do you think everyone's going to do the Woos and Unpleasant Breakfast? Is that going to be the new?
I think people will
fully. I hope not.
The Woos. And Unpleasant. I'm going to unmute myself during the shows next week and do the Woo!
So Craig and Franz were on All of It on WNYC. Craig talked about the women who came and sang on the record with them, and like Josh had brought them in. He actually said something like, well, having female voices mess with like the gravity of these stories. I'm talking about some really dark stuff here. And he was just basically like, I wasn't sure about it, and I'm really glad that I trusted him. Which is like, duh, Craig, always more women.
And I don't know that Craig necessarily needs to make a habit out of like writing songs from the female perspective. But like, he's a storyteller, and that's always what he's been known for. So why wouldn't he write a song like Me and Magdalena, which is from very clearly a woman's perspective?
And I always think about that quote from Virgin Suicides where Cecilia is in the hospital and she says to the doctor, he's like talking about like, oh, like you have so much going for you. Why would you try this? And she said, well, obviously, doctor, you've never been a 13-year-old girl. And I think about that all the time because it's like, Craig's never been a 24-year-old girl, a 32-year-old woman, but he is a storyteller that can really like nail it. Because even if you don't have that experience, I think it's still possible to emulate it and think about it thoughtfully in a way that resonates and relates to people's real experiences.
Yeah, as far as we know, and as far as we can infer, Craig's also never been, like, a drug dealer or, like...
Right, he's never been Nightclub Dwight.
Right, exactly. A good storyteller finds the universality in everything, even in the hyper-specific narratives that Craig talks about.
Yeah, I think something, it's, like, interesting because... when you talk about representation, you want to do it in a way that it's not, doesn't feel tokenizing. In some ways, it is like, okay, now we need to get a girl band. But that's better than not doing that.
Right. Right. Yeah. If this kind of movement is what gets you to finally put women on your payroll, even if it's for like a 30-minute set 4 nights a year, I mean, at least it's some progress.
It's like the notion of having a blind writer's room, but if all your writers are white men, who are they going to be attracted to when they're reading what people are submitting?
Mm-hmm.
I think The Daily Show talked a lot about how it had a blind writer's room all the time, but since that, Jon Stewart has been like, yeah, but actually, in retrospect, we kept hiring white men because everyone doing the reading is white men, and that's what they're responding to. And then the scripts that we're getting in are from people who have connections to the show, and it's just a chain, like a jerk off chain. And that's like how I think a lot of indie rock shows and circles are. And it's good that people are paying more attention to it now. But the fan base still, when you, anytime the Hold Steady tweets, if you look at the replies, it's all men.
Mm-hmm.
Like anytime that they even post on Instagram, which is a pretty female centric app, all of the replies are men. So I don't know.
It's like there was a narrative at one point that was written, and when the tagline for your band is that you're a bar band with a bunch of dudes and like beer and stuff, it's almost like saying, I don't know, it's almost like talking about wrestling. You know, although wrestling also, like, I know
storytelling.
What?
It's storytelling.
Yeah. Like,
but yeah, that's another space that women are largely not welcome into because it's quote unquote not for us.
Yeah.
Yeah. But then, like, some of the strongest female friendships that I have with people are from these shows,
mm-hmm.
and yeah. the scene. So there is something about like the solidarity that comes along with being a woman at a Hold Steady show.
There was an interview with Craig many, many years ago. He was basically saying like, there's a certain type of person that these lyrics will resonate with. So of course they're going to flock to them. And I feel like that's also why so many of us have become so close. It's because we have experiences in our past that led us to resonate with this music, these songs, these experiences. So I think that that's kind of like what builds an instant kind of connection or rapport.
I mean, there's a very specific type of person that's going to hear a song about a resurrection and be like, this is what I want to keep listening to.
Right.
Yeah.
A song about, or an album with like organs and harpsichords and in the year of our Lord. So.
There's some irony too that I forget about this often, but like I don't drink and I haven't since 2011 and it's 10 years later. So I think that right there is a good example of like, it doesn't have to be about like, you know, it
doesn't have to be about the party all the time.
Yeah. Or just that very like sort of lazy narrative that's out there that's like bar band, men.
Period. Done.
Bruce Springsteen. Yeah.
Love. But, you know, I've been drunk at a Hold Steady show in 10 years. And like, I'd go ahead and say like, I had to do that. It was incredible. Like there was this one time they played at Maxwell's in like 2007 or 2008. And they just were passing a bottle of Jack Daniels around the audience. It was a mess. It was so fun. Such a mess. Then I got in a fight with the dude I was with and cried and left. But
there's always a come down.
We've always been there.
And like, I can count on one hand the times that I've been wasted at a Hold Steady. I've never been wasted. I don't get wasted. The times I've been drunk at a Hold Steady show. Like I'm a psychopath and I'm positioning myself in front Craig Center and not leaving until the show's over. So yep. Unless I'm getting past a wine in the pit, I'm not drinking excessively. Like the last time I was drunk at a Hold Steady show was when I drank like a bottle of wine before the show started. And that was the night that dude shoved me. And I was like, I don't want to ever be drunk like at a Hold Steady show again. So as much as I raise up my wine in the pit, that's like my second glass of wine for the evening.
Yeah. There was one, it was the Harrisburg anniversary show. And that was before I knew anybody. Ironically, Cammy and Corey were at that show. I was like, bound and determined to like be in the front row. I took like a half day at work. I drove up to Harrisburg. I was living in Virginia at the time. And I got there so early. I got there early enough that like they weren't even letting people line up. So I like go and sit at the bar and I'm like, I'm gonna snack and have like a beer maybe and just like, you know, drink water or whatever, hang out. But of course I got fucking wasted. Like this is the only Hold Steady show that I've ever blacked out at. No, that's a lie. Minneapolis was bad too. But yeah, like, it was just kind of this thing of like being in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, in a brewery that a bunch of like a manufacturing plant guy is getting off work, coming to their local or whatever, and there's this girl sitting by herself. I had a lot of beers bought for me. So yeah, I got very wrecked at that one. But like, it's just not as much fun because I'm just like, I have a beer and I need to go pee 20 minutes later. And then 40 minutes after that, even if I haven't had anything else to drink. So it's just like, it's not worth it anymore. And that was the first time that I had like seen the confetti and all that. Ironically, the guy that was standing next to me, who I had like talked to for most of the night and like fully lied to, like I used to like to do this thing where I would like pretend to be somebody else if I was talking to somebody that I would never talk to again, just fully lied. And then when we were at the Jersey City show last year, two years ago, Evan and I were walking from the hotel like to the train to go up to Boston, and it was the guy that I had been talking to that night.
Oh my
like,
God.
It was the same guy. And I was like, I can't say anything right now. Like, I can't say like, oh, we've met before. But it was just like a crazy, you know.
I had planned to go to that Harrisburg show because it was such a big deal because it was that anniversary show. And it was April 2014, right? I had just, that was like my hell time. And then like flown across the country to go to Seattle and planned a conference and still managed to see the Hold Steady 3 or 4 times that spring on the Teeth Dreams tour, but could not make it to Harrisburg.
That show was really sad because Mike,
look at the mic.
Who was, as you both probably know, you know, he booked them there the first time when they were like still not big, and was just, Mike and I were like really good friends, and it was so fucking weird being back there and him not being there.
Yeah.
It was like, and 2014 was weird in general. But I just forwarded you guys an email that I got that said, like, congratulations, you're one of the 100 people that's going to this, you know, 10-year anniversary show. It's called the Abbey Bar. It's just
so cute. Oh, so it was February. Oh, I went to the one, I was there the night before at Music Hall. Were you at that one?
I was probably there.
I would assume so. So I finally met Matt Jones in person at that show.
Oh, really?
Yeah, at the Music Hall in 2014. And so technically, that is how I know Ian.
Whoa.
Small world.
They were roommates. And they were roommates.
Oh. This is good, though, because, like, I didn't... The three of us don't talk in a room a lot.
No.
So I didn't know what that would be like.
I like it.
It sucks. Podcast is off.
Those of you who have been to a Hold Steady show before know that Craig likes to end each show talking about how all of this brings him so much joy, this being the audience and the show and the whole experience. So we thought that we would bring some of that energy into the end of each of our episodes and talk about some of the things bringing us so much joy in our lives.
For me, what's bringing me so much joy this week is that I'm going to a Mets game next week, Mets versus Red Sox, with my friend Corey. And it's been probably 2 years-ish since I've gone to a baseball game, and we have to be in our 2-person pod. I don't know what that's going to look like, but I'm very excited to eat expensive fries and watch the Mets lose. It's a very dear pastime of mine.
A New York tradition.
Love very it. Much so, yes.
This week, what is bringing me so much joy is that my husband just played his first show in over a year. I got to go to a concert for the first time in over a year and see live music, and it was amazing.
Oh, nothing like it.
I love it.
Love it. This week, bringing me joy, I recently purchased a bike, and I've been doing a lot of biking around my suburban neighborhood. We have this bike trail that connects like 3 different towns, and it's been a really good place to put all of my anxious energy.
Love it.
Love
thanks
it.
For listening, everybody. Thanks for listening,
thanks for
everybody.
Understanding.
Thanks for listening. And thanks for understanding. That's my little,
right. You know, great.
We need a slate.